This is Detention, a podcast dedicated to candid conversations about education. I'm your host, Dr. Nadia Lopez, a global leader, author, speaker, coach, consultant, and entrepreneur who opened a school to close a prison. Join me as I share my insights and bring fellow disruptors to serve time in conversation. Rebels, let's get into some good trouble. Hey, Detentionites, thank you so much for joining me for another episode. Now, this whole teacher shortage has brought out a much argued case about increasing teacher salary. And while I wanted to cram this in one episode, this is going to actually be a two-part series because, as with everything in education, things become very convoluted, and this is a topic that requires a breakdown to get to who is responsible and how we can give teachers what they deserve. So in this episode, I'm going to address the media tour that the U.S. Secretary of Education has been on the past couple of weeks during this back-to-school season. Of course, many journalists have remained focused on the teacher shortage and inquiries about increasing salary. Now, let me start by saying Secretary Cardoza has stated that we need to pay teachers better wages and to improve their working conditions, as well as tap into young people who are currently in high school and inspire them to join the profession. And he never fails to mention the funding from the American Rescue Plan as a way of improving salaries and addressing the problem. But here's my biggest issue, which he really needs to be held accountable for, because there have been no mandates of the states to consider how the funding could go towards the retention of teachers. Now, there have been multiple allocations. The American Rescue Plan, which is connected to the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund, as well as the Corona Response and Relief Act, have provided billions and billions of dollars that have been distributed to schools throughout the U.S. But the mandates for receiving the money only focused on creating a comprehensive plan that detailed the return to in-person learning, which was all about purchasing masks, cleaning agents, getting additional desks, you know, those classrooms that had the screens to protect children, hand sanitizer station, testing kits, you know, anything that they needed to bring children back safely into the school environment. Even upgrades were being paid for ventilation systems and water systems. There was also a requirement to address learning loss. So that meant schools had to outline how they were going to provide targeted interventions to decrease academic gaps, purchasing of software, technology, online tutoring services, etc., etc. Then there was the providing of after-school programming through community-based organizations and creating community schools, which would then provide all of the services, such as mental health or health services, collaborating with agencies in order to create wraparound services in the school. The purchasing of new curriculum, implementing summer programs so that there could be bridge programs to provide interventions or enrichment, as well as the increase of technology and making mental health services available to children to deal with losses that they've experienced or the social stressors that was caused by COVID-19. While all of these things are very, very important, teacher salaries or ways to incentivize them was never part of the mandate. Instead, what became a priority in many states were the children. And I'm all about the kids. But as a result, because all of these plans are actually online and for public viewing, there were many companies that targeted schools specifically to get to the funds, right? So there are so many tech companies or service providers that made profits in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to millions of dollars, while teachers' pay remained stagnant. They were able to profit off the backs of our children and the adults who have been serving them. Now, I know this may sound harsh, but it is the reality. Because teachers were then still responsible for learning these new curriculums, for integrating technologies, for dealing with the mental health issues that their students had as well as their own. They had to be the ones to try to figure out how to close the achievement gap without all of the support and professional development that they needed. The powers that be clearly didn't take that into consideration, right? That's just added pressure for the teachers. And in fact, what I'm going to do is add the link for you to look state by state how the comprehensive plans were addressing either the needs of the students or the needs of the teachers. And maybe there's going to be a couple that you'll see there that address both. But I'll be honest, after doing my due diligence, there was so much focus on students and not enough around incentivizing teachers, at least those who are currently in the school and dealing with the issues that they were facing even before the pandemic. But let's get back into what could have been done differently. Well, the federal government could have made it a non-negotiable. As part of the comprehensive plans that needed to be submitted, there needed to be an inclusion of how are you going to retain teachers and how are you going to recruit new ones and prepare them to stay in the profession. A good example of this was President Obama. When he was in office, he wanted every state to adopt Common Core standards. Many were apprehensive. It was new. It was actually going to change the way students were learning. But in order to sweeten the deal, they presented over $4 billion of funding and said to states, we're going to offer race to the top funding for your state, but you have to sign on by agreeing to adopt a college and career readiness set of standards. Well, of course, the states couldn't create their own, but the U.S. government had already the connection to the Common Core standards. Now, let me be clear. The U.S. government wasn't the ones to create the Common Core standards, but they were pushing it along. And so over 40 states signed on. Now, whether or not they were successful in getting all children to be on grade level, that's a whole other conversation that I'm not going to get into right now. But you get what I'm saying. You want people to do things, you sweeten the deal with the money. You want more teachers to get the funding that they deserve, and you're already giving states the money, make sure they include and prioritize the teachers. That's all I'm saying. Because right now, in Ohio, the second largest district is experiencing a strike from the teachers. Here's the thing. There are 4,000 educators who are willing to stay out of work, which has now compromised the start of the school, first day of school, which was actually today. It has turned into a 3-day strike, all because they're demanding not just higher pay, but better working conditions. You have folks working in buildings that have no adequate heat and then doesn't have air conditioning. So children in the summertime can barely focus because it's so hot in the building. And when it's the wintertime, it's too cold for them to even concentrate. They have lead and asbestos in the building. There's no physical education teacher. There are no arts programs. Like, how does this happen in elementary school? This is 2022. And you have teachers arguing this point. And I'm thinking to myself, there are 47,000 children in the school district. Where are the parents? Why are they not out there picketing with these teachers? Because the reality is that if the teachers are suffering, so are the children. But this is why so many feel like glorified babysitters. Like, you don't care as a society about our own personal well-being. See, we have to start showing up. It's not a school thing. It's not only the parents who have children type of thing. It is, these are young people who in the future need to know that they have the skills and ability to enter industries or create their own businesses. But if they don't have the skills to do so, we are looking at children who will end up in prison. We are looking at children whose lifespans can be decreased because when you're not educated, it also affects your health. When you're not educated, it affects the decisions you make. And why should anybody have to go through that? If you think about the good teachers you had in your lives, you know, the one who motivated you, who believed in you, who imparted knowledge that wasn't even part of the curriculum, who saw something in you that encouraged you to show up every single day and love something about learning. Every child deserves that. But we forget our schools are funded by public funds. So therefore, there's an obligation for the districts to provide us with what the budget looks like. And this is often discussed, whether it's on the school level, at school meetings, you know, PTA meetings, or at the local board meetings or education council meetings. But they're public documents. So we should know how the funding is being allocated, because again, all of this teacher shortage stuff didn't start right now. It didn't start because of the pandemic. It started way before this. And we can keep saying there's not enough money, but let me tell you about this multi-trillion dollar industry we call education. It is a business, folks. And oftentimes the money is mismanaged. And there are a lot of people who either don't know how to manage money or they do with it what they will because no one is paying attention. Either way, who's suffering? Our children, because they're not getting quality education because our classes are oversized, the resources aren't in their classrooms, there's a lack of equity because of the type of quote unquote zip codes that our schools are located in. But more so the teachers, the ones who get up every single day and have sacrificed themselves, but are not compensated, are not recognized, are not considered. Every decision about their profession is being made by individuals who never show up in the classroom, who never offer support, who don't empathize with what they have to go through. Yet the responsibility to make children close achievement gaps are on them. How fair is that? So when I think about the Me Too movement and I think about Black Lives Matter, all of those things came out of frustration. It came out of people saying enough is enough and we need to stand together under a unified front. Why are we not doing that for education? Why are we not showing up for generations to come? It is almost insulting. And as someone who may not be a school leader, but still, I pride myself on being an educator, I'm going to tell you this. This cannot be done in silo. Educators need advocates. They need people standing on the front lines. And all of the energy that we saw during the pandemic needed to show up. It needs to show up right now. And to those people who are in Ohio who are standing firm, who may be getting criticized by parents who are saying, this is unfair to our kids. Would you want your children to work under subpar circumstances? Would you be okay with them dealing with abuse? Would you allow someone to treat them like they are less than what you've grown them to be? And if any of those answers are no, then don't expect a teacher to do the same. This is what detention is all about, folks. I'm not here to mince words. I'm here to share the things that are not often provided in mainstream media. Because the reality is that I've done this work as a leader, and I know how politicized this industry can be. And to allow people to remain ignorant by not feeding them the knowledge that's necessary to have a full understanding of why we're here at this very moment with all of these issues, that will force me to perpetuate all of the things that we see right now. I want better for our children. I want better for this profession that I love. And so in the next episode, I'm definitely going to share with you how the argument about the pay raise without proper planning can actually have bigger consequences. So I want you to stay tuned and also consider supporting Detention Podcast by becoming a subscriber through Anchor FM. That helps keeps the lights on, that helps keeps the edits going so that we can, you know, continuously provide you with content. And I want to say thank you to my producer, Rondell, for always encouraging me and saying that what I'm doing is actually a benefit, because it could be a lot. And what you don't see is what it takes to do this behind the scenes. So stay tuned. And remember, check the show notes for all of the information that I shared throughout this episode. Thank you for serving time with me here in detention. Don't forget to subscribe and to tell a friend so that this way you're up to date on new episodes that will drop every week. You can also follow us on Instagram at Detention Podcast. If you want to learn more about my services as a coach, consultant, and keynote speaker, go to www.thelopezeffect.com. And let's stay connected on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by following me on my handle, The Lopez Effect. Lastly, if you have any topic ideas, questions or comments, or want to sponsor future episodes, please send me an email at detentionwithdrnadialopez@gmail.com. All of this information will be in the show notes, so don't worry if you didn't get it down. I also want to send a gentle reminder to my disruptors and rebels. It's okay for us to get into a little bit of good trouble, but please take gentle care of yourself, be well, and never forget to choose you.